Hello and welcome to the Sound on Sound podcast. I'm Paul White and with me is Hugh Robjohns.
Hello there.
Hugh and I are going to talk about bits and pieces that we've seen over the last year and why we like them. Hugh, what stuck out in your memory from things that you reviewed over 2021?
I think the thing that probably impressed me the most was the Zoom F6. It's a little portable digital recorder, six-channel digital recorder, and it's the size of a large box of matches, really. It's ludicrous. The box is the size that you'd need to put six XLRs on and a battery connector at the back. It's just the most remarkable thing. The quality is really very impressive. When it first came out, it was selling for around about 750 quid. And now you can buy it for just over £500, which makes it even better. The problem with a small box is always that the controls are too small and fiddly. But with this machine, because it records in 32-bit floating point, you actually don't need to adjust recording levels. You just plug things in, switch it on, away it goes, and you can sort all the levels out later on in post-production very easily. So it's just to kind of plug it in and forget about it, six-channel digital recorder that you can put into a pocket or a rucksack on your back. It's fabulous. It's the most impressive piece of engineering I've seen all year.
Well, that sounds pretty hard to beat. I mean, for me, I suppose Logic 10.7 is a big deal because it supports Dolby Atmos. The downside, of course, is that it only works on computers that can run Big Sur or onwards, which means that all those of us working on the old cheese grater Mac Pros are a little bit stuck because we can only go up to Mojave, and even then only after changing the graphics card, which leaves us stuck on 10.5. So the question is, do we need immersive audio? In terms of things I've reviewed, there are a lot of pedals these days that are based on existing software, and they're really rather good. And IK Multimedia have come in with their X-Range. Eventide have got a load of pedals based on their H9 algorithms. And UA have also started developing pedals, and they're all really, really nice. The one that I'm going to focus on, I think, is the one from IK Multimedia. It's called Space, or X-Space. It's a reverb pedal, but not as we know it, because it does all the trick reverbs such as shimmer and bloom and reverse and all the stuff that you need if you're going to write music for old hippies, which indeed I am. The other really nice thing about it, apart from its ease of use, is that when you buy it, you also get the software equivalent of it free of charge. And I think that's quite a big deal because you can then create your own patches in the software. And using USB connection, you can beam them back over to the pedal, which saves a lot of menu cruising. I like it. So what's next for you, Hugh?
Well, continuing my my association with ludicrously expensive high-end products.
Yes.
One of the other things that I was really impressed with this year was the Demon from Trinov, which is a French company who make loudspeaker correction software and hardware products. And they are very expensive, but to me, they are the best by quite a long way in terms of what they can deliver. The problem in a professional environment, of course, and even in a project studio for that matter, is that we tend to use more than one set of loudspeakers. And if you want to use Trinov's room correction, you need a separate box, or up until now, you've needed a separate box for each set of speakers. And that obviously makes it really prohibitively expensive. The Demon, when it's coupled with a thing called the La Remote, which is, as the name suggests, a remote control unit, that allows you to correct a number of loudspeakers all in the same box and then control them like a monitor controller. So essentially, it's a big monitor controller that does room correction for each of the speakers you attach to it in a very clever, very integrated, sophisticated kind of way. It's moved the whole technology forward in such a lovely way. So it's still stupidly expensive, and you'd need very expensive monitors to really justify it. I think the box, you're looking at around about £7,500 for a system that would deal with six speakers.
And that's more than most of us spend on our own entire studios.
Yeah, exactly. But from a professional point of view, it's actually a very cost-effective solution for a post-production studio or a small music studio. And it's just very clever technology, and I really like that.
So how convinced are you by room correction software? I mean, I've always thought that it's a frequency domain correction for a time domain problem.
Yeah, there are limitations to what it can do, I'm sure. And I think relying on it without sorting out the room acoustics mechanically first would be a foolish thing to do. But if you've got the room as well as you can acoustically, then it just adds that sort of extra sort of 5 or 10% to get you very close to perfection on top.
Sounds good. Right, I've been looking at software this year, quite a lot of different plugins, and usually I try to seek out the more unusual things, but starting with the sensible things first, I was quite impressed by IKE Multimedia's Amplitude 5, which has taken guitar modelling on to a new level for them. And also at the other end of the scale, a very affordable Cherry Orchard Stardust 201 Echo, which is based on the Space Echo and includes not only wow and flutter, but also a separate modulation section and a decent reverb. And I really like the sound of that. At the more eccentric end of the software range, we have Waves Retrofi, which is essentially a toolkit of audio destruction. It starts off with impulse responses of various antique devices, and then you go through lots of different stages of different kinds of nastiness, and if anything makes it out to the other end on extreme settings, you'll be very lucky. But used a bit more sensibly, it can actually add a lot of character to something, and I think I'm going to be using that quite a lot. So that's Waves Retrofi. I also reviewed Rob Papen's Del Sane, which is a kind of insane delay, I suppose. At least I think that's what he's implying with the title. So it starts off as a delay, but it's got all kinds of moving filters and modulation that affect the tonality of the delay taps, so you can get a lot of movement in the sound. I like that a lot. And also, recently I tried SSL's Native X Echo, which blurs the lines between delay and reverb and just has a very nice textural sound. So there's a lot going on in the plugin market.
I've always been big on education. I always think there's the more you learn, the more you can do. And there was a book that came out early in the year. I think I reviewed it in March, towards the beginning of the year, called Classical Recording, A Practical Guide in the Deco Tradition. And it's just the most fabulous book. As I say, I reviewed it, well, I probably read it in January or February, and I've been reading it throughout the year. You just keep going back to it and dipping in. And there's just so much information in there. A lot of books about recording, particularly recording classical situations, are very dry, and they're either very simplistic and they just tell you that you need a crossed pair or a ORTF pair or whatever, or they get incredibly technical and detailed and silly. Whereas this book is written by three people who used to work for Decca, and they're very practical and they're very sensible, and they are brilliant at explaining what's going on and how. They don't just tell you about a mic array, they tell you what happens when you move it forwards or backwards, or how you can alter it to change the parameters and what kind of effects you get when you do that. And it's just such a good book. And of course, Decca, world famous for their recordings, but it's very hard to find out exactly how they developed the techniques they did. And this book explains how they got to where they got and why they go there and why they record things the way they do and why they sound the way they do. And it's just, if you're only going to buy one book to read, that's the one to get. Classical Recording, A Practical Guide in the Decca Tradition. It's about £30 or so in softback and well worth every penny.
Certainly does sound like it. OK, as you may know, I play guitar, or at least I have a guitar and make noises come out of it. And on the guitar emulation pedal front, I've tried a few things this year. I quite like the Boss IR200, which, as its name suggests, uses impulse responses to get the speaker cabinet emulation sounding good. But the one that really took my fancy was from English company Blackstar, and they've come out with a range of dual drive or dual channel pedals, the dual drive being the one I like the most. And the interesting thing there is that the circuitry is valve circuitry run off the full 200 volts plus to give you the actual performance of a proper valve rather than one that's been used at a starved voltage. But then inside the same box, the signal is digitised and goes through an IR-based speaker emulation system with quite a few speaker emulations built in, but also the option to download different ones from their website. And it just sounds really rather good. I mean, so many of these DI things either don't sound right or they don't feel right in your hands. But this one, I felt I could make a record with this and not feel I'd missed out by not miking an amplifier. The other good feature of that particular product is that it has a USB recording interface as well. So you don't even have to plug it into the analog inputs of your interface to get a result out of it. You can use it as the interface. So that's one to look out for.
Staying on the interface theme, there's two that I'd like to mention. The first is the RME AIO Pro, which is an internal HD what do they call it? An internal HDSP e-card. Probably doesn't apply to Mac users, I guess, but for PC users with a desktop machine, I find it quite convenient to be able to put the interface inside the machine. There are benefits in all sorts of technical ways, and it's also very neat from a practical point of view. I've used the original AIO card for years and years, and it's served me extremely well. But RME recently upgraded it significantly. It was a total redesign, really. Brand new converters, lots of minor tweaks, really, but they all improved the user experience. I mean, even simple things like they put muting relays on all the analog outputs so that you don't get the clicks and bangs when the computer powers up, which you did with the original card. And it's just very good. The converters are derived from the ADI-2 Pro, so they're very high quality, best quality converters they've used in any of their HDSE cards, I think. The only problem you have now is that because they use AKM converters, they've been difficult to get hold of since the fire in Japan. So supply is very short at the moment. It's going to take a while to build stocks back up. But if you're looking for an internal card, that's undoubtedly the best I've come across so far. I think it's 14 inputs and 16 outputs. Digital, you've got ADAT, you've got AES and SPDIF, and then a couple of line-level analog in and outs and headphones as well. So it's very comprehensively equipped, covers pretty much every base. And the other one, which I'll mention, is a bit of a cheat because we didn't actually publish the review until this year, 2022, but we looked at it at the end of last year, and that's the SSL Big Six, which is an analog console where they've actually now built in a USB interface. And that really does everything that everybody hoped the original Six mixer would have done but didn't. And it's just added more mic inputs, more stereo line inputs, more connectivity, easier connectors because it uses standard connectors rather than DB25, so it's TRS and XLRs, just easier to plug in. And you've got that direct USB link to your computer, so it now really does serve as a front end for recording and a back end for monitoring, all in a box with that SSL sound and the SSL look, which, okay, call me shallow, but there's something very special about the way SSL products look.
Yes, and I know that Sam was very impressed by it when he reviewed it.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really nice thing, very well put together. And it's a major achievement from the SSL buyout by Audio-Tonics because of their access to a factory in China, which can produce this really high-quality material at very good prices. It's about £2,500 for a really good mixer. Okay, Paul, I mean, most of my things I've mentioned, apart from the book, have all been hardware. You could even say the book was hardware, I suppose. It's a physical thing. What have you seen that's unusual in the way of hardware? Because most of the things you've talked about so far have been software.
That's true. Well, there's the thing that I reviewed earlier on in the year called the VibraSlide, which comes from Aum Guitars, a very small company started in Wales and then has moved to France for better weather, I think. And this is a glass slide that you would play a slide guitar with, but inside it is a magnetic system that's very much like an e-bow, which gives you infinite sustain. And so you can play slide guitar and have notes that just go on forever. It takes a bit of getting used to because you have to damp out the notes or strings that you don't want to play at the same time. But you can put an effects pedal or a volume pedal in its send and return loop so that you can either change the timbre or the volume of the feedback and get some kind of control over it. For example, if you stick a wah-wah pedal in the loop, you don't hear a wah-wah effect, but the filtering effect means that the sustainer is picking up on different harmonics as you sweep through it. If you put a volume pedal in there, then you can change the sensitivity from nothing, so you're playing an ordinary slide, up to infinite sustain. So that's pretty good for weirdness. The other thing, of course, comes from Game Changer Audio, who are the masters of weirdness. This time it's their light pedal. And I saw this at the NAMM show back in 2019, I think it would have been. And I couldn't make out whether I liked it or not because it was in the guitar hall where the average sound pressure level is about 115 dBs and occasionally falls to 112. So it really just sounded like, I don't know, someone shredding a dustbin. But what it actually is a spring reverb with the standard spring reverb pickups on it, but there's also a set of optical pickups along the spring, and there's a modulation side to it as well, so that you can mix the different pickups together. You can modulate between the various optical sensors to get some kind of, I don't know, evolving texture. And it's capable of quite an extraordinary range of sounds, anything from a decent amplifier spring reverb to something like a waterphone or a submarine being crushed.
Intriguing.
Yeah, it is intriguing. Great for those people who are making weird samples. You know, if you run out of ideas, just take what you've already done and feed it through that box and you've got a whole new set. It's wonderful. Okay, Hugh, have you got one to finish off with?
One last one that I think is definitely worth an honourable mention, and that's Grace Design's M900, which is a D2A and headphone amplifier in a really small little box with a big knob on top to control the volume. And it's digital-only input, so it can either be USB or SPDIF inputs. There's some analogue outs to drive speakers if you want to. Obviously, you plug headphones in the front. Very, very high quality. And the nice thing about it is that it has all the normal sort of monitor control functions you'd expect built in. So you can listen to the mono sum, you can listen to the stereo difference signal, you can mute and dim and all those kind of things that you often need to be able to do. And if you're working out on location or nice sunny day and you want to take your laptop to the bottom of the garden, it's the ideal partner to listen to what you're doing. It's very nice, very high quality. Ticks all my boxes.
That sounds good, Hugh. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for, but please do join us again next time. We're on the Sound on Sound podcast channel.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. And be sure to check out the show notes page for this episode, where you'll find further information along with web links and details of all the other episodes. Oh, and just before you go, let me point you to the soundonsound.com/podcasts website page, where you can explore what's playing on our other channels.